You're listening to the RedCafe.net podcast.
Coming up on episode 14 of the RedCafe.net podcast, we'll be discussing events from Stamford Bridge and what defeat may mean in the title race. We'll be catching up with the progress of all the United players currently out on loan, and Dob will bring us news of the latest result for the reserves too.
Welcome to the RedCafe.net podcast. You can email us at podcast@redcafe.net or alternatively, post your opinion on the RedCafe.net forums.
Well, welcome to episode 14 now of the RedCafe.net podcast. Thanks a lot for tuning in this week. As usual, I'm joined by Dan and Dov. How are we guys this week?
I'm very well, Steve. Had quite a good weekend. I actually managed to see Mr. Daniel Lomax in the flesh. It was quite the experience, I'll tell you that much.
Must have been some spectacle.
Oh, I wasn't ready for it. He never prepared me for the greatness of him there.
You both. I was in Edinburgh with Dov. Nice little city. Is it a city or a town?
Shut up! It's a city.
I know. Well,
you didn't have very much good things to say about it, to be fair.
I thought it was all right. I went watching a musical. Went on a haunted tour, which was a bit not very haunted, which was a bit rubbish. Didn't really happen. And obviously watched the match with your good self. So
good stuff. What about you, Steve? What delights did you get up to?
Not a great deal, to be honest. Obviously, just watched the game. Very disappointing. And we'll move on to that in a second. But no, other than that, I played football myself on the Saturday. We won 5-1. So. That was probably about the only positive from the weekend. But yeah, let's start with the game, shall we? Chelsea away, 1-0 defeat. Dov, we were looking so good. We were containing them. We were stopping players like Lampard, Essien, doing what they like to do, which is controlling the midfield. It was all going so well. And then we had the bad refereeing decision, the free kick. And even then, the goal probably should have been ruled out. So hugely disappointing to have lost.
So you mentioned Frank Lampard there. You mean he was playing? I can't say I actually noticed him during the whole game, and Deco as well. Where was he? Where was this fantastic Chelsea midfielder? That, to be fair, I'll admit I was quite apprehensive about, or before the game, and even like seeing the teams as well, I was a bit like, I don't know about this. But like you say, completely for me, we were by far the better side, especially in the first half. And I think the one thing you could say is we lack a cutting edge. That's the one one criticism I'll give. We certainly lack a cutting edge. I mean, Rooney, for all his running around and showing people what great effort he puts in, he really needs to learn to stay up front, especially when he's playing up front on his own. But I was quite impressed by Fletcher, Carrick and Anderson. I'd say to Dan during the game as well, I quite like that sort of trio in the middle of the park. So I think they all complement each other's games. And yeah, I think any apprehensions were sort of like taken away after the first half hour completely.
Dan, what are your thoughts on it? I mean, when you look at it, Chelsea going into that game were absolutely flying, weren't they? Especially at Stamford Bridge. They'd scored 4 or 5 goals the previous 2 or 3 games. And for us to go there and completely shut them out, and then to be unfortunate to concede the goal. There are plenty of positives, aren't there?
Yeah, I mean, I thought we played really well. Possession-wise, we kept the ball fairly well. Like you say, in the final third, we just lacked that killer ball. To limit Chelsea to the chances that they had, I thought we did extremely well. I thought that Johnny Evans and Wes Brown were magnificent in centre of defence. They contained Drogba, really. I didn't think he had a decent game, Drogba, but Anelka got a man of the match, but I'm not quite sure about that. I don't remember him being too significant. And like you say, the goal was unfortunate. I don't think it was a free kick on Fletcher. I mean, he did get the ball. Maybe he went in a bit hard, but I mean, he clearly got the ball. Ashley Cole jumped out of the way. Ref gives
It's not even that, Dan. It's like he got even if he didn't get the ball, he didn't go in with any malice or there was nothing there. I don't know anybody that said it was a free kick.
No, you're completely right. Even that though, I mean, you know, the ball in. Why is John Terry unmarked for one? to get his head on it. And two, obviously, Drogba's pulling Wes Brown down. But in my eyes, I mean, Wes Brown there, it's not a big tug. Pretty sure he could have stayed on his feet, you know, and the linesman's not seeing it, or the referee's not seeing it, so you can't really do much about it. But no, I thought the least we deserved was a point, but you know, it's not to be. And I think it's shown improvement, because obviously at Anfield we were disappointing, didn't really turn up. Liverpool outrun us and outpassed us all game, but this time at Stamford Bridge we turned up, played well as a team, which was nice to see. So I mean, I think there's something to be positive about, so I'm not too worried, and it's only 5 points. I mean, we're not even in December yet, so I wouldn't be too concerned.
It was worse last season at this point. We were further behind the leaders, so I mean, that could be taken as a positive as well.
All that means is that, you know, if we beat Chelsea at Old Trafford, you know, it's back down to 2 points. So I'm sure they'll lose another game between now and then. But it's up to us whether we keep winning. If we keep winning, Chelsea will be put under pressure. But I still think they'll be our main contenders. But I said to you, didn't I, Dov, on Sunday about Arsenal. Might have a cheeky bet on Arsenal because they're playing some good football. And they're looking pretty decent at the moment.
We've still got to go to the Emirates as well, haven't we? Which is slightly worrying considering the form they're in. But I think they'll be up there with Chelsea.
What did you say, like some sort of player performances and individuals? I'd like to start with our Welsh veteran, Ryan Giggs. I thought he was quite horrible in the first half, to be honest. Steve, what did you think?
Yeah, I'm with you on that one, Dov, to be honest. I thought Giggs was pretty poor throughout. Not the usual performance we expect to see from him this season, because he really has been tremendous for us, and obviously we can't expect him to produce week in, week out. But yeah, Ivanovic, wasn't it, he was up against, he just couldn't seem to get the better of him. And I'd have expected, when you put them two together on paper, that Giggs would surely be able to be on top of him, but he wasn't in the end, and yeah, disappointing.
So you think with that thing you said, that you mentioned Ivanovic, which that was what I was going to come on to next. He's not the fastest, right? And the things, when you've got a player like Giggs who's like, he's getting on a bit, so he's obviously not got the pace that he once had. I would have had somebody like maybe Nani or Obertan on trying to take this boy, trying to take him on for pace, because he's not a fast defender. And I think if you can get, when we did get down our left hand side, we looked a lot more of a potent threat. And that was something I thought, I said this to Dan during the game as well, something I thought that needed sort of rectifying, because he's clearly, if you could say he's a weak link, he's maybe one of the weaker areas of their defence, the defensive line, and I didn't think we exploited it enough.
I think when you look at the team, Dov, Sir Alex set out knowing that Chelsea were going to be an attacking threat, and that's why he's gone with Giggs, because he knows Giggs is the sort of player that won't shirk his defensive duties. He will always work back, put a tackle in for the team, whereas someone like, I don't know, Nani's probably a bit harsh, because Nani does do his fair share of defending. He will work back. But someone like Obertan, we're not really sure what he's capable of as a defender.
I was just looking for more somebody just to take him on for a bit. Even, like, I was thinking about this the other day. I'll put this to you both, right? You know how we were talking last season about playing Rooney on the left-hand side, right? If you look at, like, a lot of the sort of more, or sort of the more world-class attacking players in the world, for example, Messi, who sort of plays on that sort of right wing sort of area, and then you've got like Pato at Milan, who sort of started to develop on that right-hand side area and is really coming on very well. Ronaldinho used to play on the opposite side, on the left sort of wing, and cutting inside and taking players on and stuff like that. Do you think, we said last season maybe not with Rooney, but I'm sort of leaning towards playing Rooney on that sort of left wing area of the five-man midfield.
It's all about system though, Dov, isn't it? I mean, when we had Ronaldo, we could afford to play that system with the two attacking wingers and the one sort of focal point striker. To be honest, I don't think, without Ronaldo, I don't think we've got two out-and-out wingers that can do that job. And I think you take away some of Rooney's qualities if you stick him out on the wing. I think he is a centre-forward. He likes to play just off the striker and pick up the little pieces around the box. And yeah, I'd much rather see him at the head of the attack. But I do see what you're saying. But I wouldn't compare Rooney to someone like Messi, Pato. I think they're different players.
Yeah, no, I'm not saying they're the same player. I'm just saying, like, because he plays well when he's out there. And I quite like the midfield trio of Carrick, Fletcher and Anderson playing together. I just think they complement each other well and they can control a game. And if you've got somebody like Rooney, who'll do the donkey work as well, and he's got that quality, and then if you get somebody like Berbatov to be the focal point, which he's supposed to be, I know, like, maybe Rooney's natural position is behind a striker in the middle. But I just think, as a system, it could work wonders for us. And I think maybe if we had that and maybe Berbatov playing on a Sunday, we probably would have won the game. I don't know, that's just my views.
I mean, I can understand why Ferguson played Valencia, because obviously Trippack's back. He's quite good defensive cover against Ashley Cole, but Ivanovic isn't the type of player that's going to, you know, bomb down the right wing that many times. If it was Biswinger, then I'd understand. But, I mean, why not put somebody attacking against him, like Dov said, and get behind him? Because when we did get behind Chelsea, we looked a threat. And obviously, if you've got three men midfield, you'd expect one or two of them to be on the edge of the box. I just think that we could have been a bit more attacking. We might have got something out of the game.
I think, for me, for Rooney as well, he needs to learn, if he's playing up front, he needs to learn to stay there. Like, the amount of times he'd come like deep. Like, there was one point he was in the left-back position defending, yeah, and then he tried to lump the ball forward to nobody, to Valencia, who was like challenging, I think it's Carvalho or Terry, for a header. I mean, that's not going to happen. He needs to be a bit more disciplined in his positioning, I think.
Just really quickly, from what you're saying there, Dov, I think another thing about Rooney playing on the wide left, what about the problem where he likes to drop and help the defence and work back? How would you get him to make sure he's more like a Ronaldo, if you like, where Ronaldo will just stay up front and hog the touchline, and very rarely will he sort of drop back and help and defend? And you've got that problem with Rooney because of his desire. He will chase balls back, he will help out the defence, and maybe that system wouldn't work with Rooney wanting to be so involved in the defensive department as well as the
attack. I see that more as a positive, though, because if you're playing against a good right winger, say someday of like Maicon, for example, at Inter, who loves to bomb forward, and if you've got a player like Rooney who will follow him, it could maybe pin him or pin him back even as well, because Rooney's a top quality. I think he's a top quality player, and like he's got the pace, and he's got the technique and the skill, and he's also got that work rate as well. And I just think that it would work.
But wasn't that one of the main criticisms when he was being played there last season, that you weren't seeing his attacking qualities as a result, because he was having to sacrifice them to keep getting back and helping out the defence? Isn't that why he's been moved forward? Obviously, the departure of Ronaldo has contributed to that as well. But surely he's more of a threat as advanced and as far up the pitch as possible.
Well, certainly it's more of a threat, but I just think as a system, we looked much better playing that 4-5-1/4-3-3 against Chelsea than we have done in some points this season. Like the 4-4-2, are just, I think, with like Nani and Valencia on the wings, sometimes, or a lot of the time, it doesn't really work, especially the way the modern game's played. I think you need to control the midfield, and I think the argument's really gone on like with Fletcher, Anderson and Carrick. I think they work well in the midfield, control the game, and then sort of to have Rooney where Giggs was, he could offer that attacking threat and also help the defence back as well, and then you can have maybe Berbatov or somebody like that.
See what you're saying, and it could be a case of, do you sacrifice the talents of Rooney for the good of the team, sort of debate, isn't it? And there are pros and cons, aren't there, really, to both. But what about the performance of the defence in this one? I mean, Wes Brown and Johnny Evans back in there again, obviously Rio and Vidic still not in contention, so they did all right, didn't they? I mean, Dan mentioned that Brown was a bit suspect on the actual goal, where he should have maybe stayed up, but no, they did all right. Evans didn't look troubled really at all by Drogba, and
I loved his big massive kick in Drogba's chest. That was great. Just like, have some of that, Didier. And then did you not love the when he was, his legs were shaking like he was having some crazy epileptic fit?
That really annoyed me. That
so that was sort of the point where the game got a bit heated as well. Like Drogba was just milking it to the extremes.
Yeah, but then when he's walking off, like he's having a go at the ref or whatever, or Johnny Evans, it's like he's not even in any pain at all. He's just a pillock. I don't like him.
And there you go. That is Didier Drogba, everybody.
No, he's such a good player. He's kind of like Ronaldo was, I suppose. But like, he's such a good player. He doesn't need to do it. Just get on with it. Just winds me up.
I agree completely, Dan. We were getting very angry.
did you see Vidic having a laugh as well at the side when he was warming up?
Yeah, that was great.
Who was laughing at that, I don't know, but I imagine he was.
Vidic was just like, I could do that better. Like he would have got back. He wouldn't have got back up if Vidic done it.
And just looking ahead, guys, in terms of fixtures against the so-called Big Four, and if you can include City as a part of that, is there any even slight worry that the fact we have to go to Arsenal, we have to go to Eastlands, do you look at that and think it's going to be tough? I mean, I know it's only 5 points, but Chelsea are looking sublime. They've had that transfer ban lifted, well, not lifted, but postponed during January as well, so they'll be able to get some reinforcements in if they want to. Ancelotti looks like he knows what he's doing, and it's going to be difficult, isn't it?
I think the key time for Chelsea, like a lot of people have said, it'll be January. They've got a few players away. I think they've got quite easy fixtures in January. I don't know them off the top of my head, but I was reading something about the fixtures they've got. They've got reasonably easy fixtures, but I think you've got a few players away if they pick up injuries, things like that. And then when it gets to sort of February, March time, that's when you get sort of, you've got the FA Cup, Champions League, Premier League, like weekend, week, midweek, something like that. So there's still a long way to go. It's a marathon, not a sprint. But and it, like Dan said earlier on, it's only 5 points. I mean, that's a couple of draws and a defeat, and then we're level, sort of thing. And obviously, we start to play them as well. So, I mean, I'm not too worried just yet.
You're listening to the RedCafe.net podcast.
Well, that's enough about the Chelsea game. But unfortunately, Dov's going to keep the depressing nature of the pod so far up when he discusses the reserves.
Well, Steve, that was quite a depressing link as well. I liked it, though. It was good fun. The reserve game was Manchester City against Manchester United at the Regional Athletics Arena in Manchester, of all places. And the result was 1-0 to Manchester City. Yes. Not even the positives from the reserves this week. I'll quickly go over the game because I have to. It was rubbish, unmemorable, dour, etc., etc. It was the second league defeat of the season for the reserves, and United were top of the northern section of the reserve league going into the game, but they're now second, and they're second to Liverpool. So, I mean, this couldn't really get any worse. Well, the hosts, City, they started much the better and basically put us to shame, which, going by this season so far, it doesn't happen very often. And they got their reward 20 minutes into the match when Alex Nimley scored for them. He's an under 20 England international. Basically, what happened was he latched onto a long ball from Greg Cunningham and then lobbed Ron Robert Zieler. So, you know, it doesn't get it. It's just depression after depression after depression. Shortly after that, we had a player sent off. Scott Wooten was sent off for us. It was basically a really hard challenge on one of the City players, and straight away sent off. So basically that was game over for us. One man down, one goal down, wasn't really happening. The weather, it was incessantly raining, as it was described on ManchesterUnited.com, and basically we never had any openings at all. But the only chance we had was that a Fabian Brandy came close quite near the end. His shot was cleared off the line. That was pretty much it. Other than that, we were terrible. I think we should move on to more upbeat topics, maybe. I don't know. Are there any, Steve? Help me out.
Well, to be honest, not really. But we got an email from James McAllister, and he wants to know about Zoran Tosic. So as we're still discussing the reserves, Dov, I mean, Tosic, he's been playing really well in the reserves, scored a few goals, but he's not really had the chance to step up in the first team. He got a few minutes at Barnsley, didn't he, in the Carling Cup. But other than that, no, he's not really been given a look in. And Obertan, I suppose Tosic looks at it and thinks, well, Gabriel Obertan, he comes in, gets himself fit, and he's pretty much straight away given an opportunity to impress. And Tosic hasn't really been afforded that luxury. So, A, why do you think that is? And B, I know we've discussed this so many times, but do you think he will ever get the chance to show what he's all about?
Well, I think, but I think we need to be a bit patient with the lad. He has been really good in the reserves, apart from the game against City, where he wasn't very good, but nobody was really very good. And I think we've mentioned his slight frame as well. Maybe it's just like, because he's such a slight player, maybe he's going to maybe be a bit later developing, like, physically than some other players. But I really can't answer, like, why he's not being given a chance to first team. I mean, if you go on reserve performances, then he should be. So I think that's more a question for Sir Alex Ferguson. I'll get him on the phone next week and ask him. But
I'd like to see Tosic play, because even if it's just for like his free kicks and his corners. Because I tell you what, sometimes we are woeful. Mate, how many corners did we have in the last 10 minutes of that game at Stamford Bridge? And not one of them was a decent ball in. Mm. And it gets really frustrating, because it's still a chance. And you know, like, Chelsea scored off a set piece. They're so important. You know, it turns a 0-0 into a 1-0. 3 points, it's invaluable. It's not like we don't have the players to attack it. Wes Brown, I'm pretty sure, is decent in the air. Johnny Evans could get his fair share of goals if he had the decent balls in. You know, you've got players in there that want it.
John O'Shea, you forget it. Everybody forgets about John O'Shea. John O'Shea is lethal.
Well, John O'Shea, he's got a few goals from headers and stuff. He's not a problem.
We actually scored from a corner this season. I mean, O'Shea scored one with a set piece, wasn't it? But I don't think it was a corner.
I think so. Like, I'm definitely with Dan on this one. The deliveries now are poor, and I think Tosic is, that's one thing, is his set pieces and are just fantastic, and he's got a good delivery on him. So
I mean Nani's all right from free kicks. Again, he's inconsistent, but he's probably our best corner taker, I'd say.
Never usually gets it past the first man, though, in the times I've
I don't know if it's planned or not. I don't know if it's rubbish or if it's planned, because sometimes somebody makes that run to the near post, and it's almost as if, well, when you get it right and you get the flick on, it works a treat, doesn't it? But when it doesn't and you under hit it, it just falls flat on its ass. So I don't know.
I think, going back to the Chelsea game, I think sort of near the end as well, there's not like three or four different corner takers. I think Giggs had one, Carrick had one, Overton had one,
yeah.
Anderson took one. I mean, where's the like consistency there? I mean, like, if you've got somebody like Beckham in the team, you know Beckham's going to take every single corner, and it's going to be a good delivery. If you've got somebody like Ronaldo, or like, you know, it's going to be a good free kick, probably going to go on target, something like that. We don't have anybody like that just now.
Hargreaves on it.
It's like
he'll take free kicks, but
Hargreaves. Yeah, I mean, but there was a point where we had a free kick against Chelsea outside the area, and I think Rooney was stood over it. Valencia was, and Giggs was, and I didn't feel confident that anyone. I know Giggs scored that goal against Tottenham, but you don't
think Giggs free kicks, really, do you?
No, he's very good at them. It's not a problem. Not from that position where he was started at, though. Rooney didn't really look interested in it, and I thought, why is Valencia there?
Isn't that the one where Rooney laid it off and Valencia just hit it and it was blocked?
Yeah, well, I don't understand that, because me and Dov had a better argument over it, I think. But like, what's the point in knocking it 2 yards and the defender's on top of you? I don't understand why they do it. If you're going to do it, work it the other way to get a crossing, get a better angle. But I don't understand. That's why I'm not a pro footballer.
We've waved for Duffel a wee bit from Zoran Tosic, but like, I think, yeah, there are definitely arguments for getting him in the team, be it performances and also set pieces. So
he might turn out to be absolute rubbish, you know. But unless he gets the proper chance, like Obertan, like you say, Steve, he's come back from injury. You know, he's played three times for us already, and it's like, well. You know, Tosic must get a bit wound up about that. I think I would if I was in his situation.
True. I don't know. I think hopefully he'll get maybe a few FA Cup games and stuff like that as well, and impress and then sort of keep his place in the side. So we shall see.
Okay, well, James's second question, he sort of alludes to the progress of Adam Ljajic and Mama Biram Diouf, who are both, well, can we say they're on United books, but currently out on loan. And that brings us quite nicely onto Loan Watch, actually. So, we'll discuss a few of the players that are out on loan, and that does include those two. I'm going to start by going through about six, and then Dov's going to come in and give us the last few to finish it off. So we'll start with Diouf. As you know, he's with Molde in Norway at the moment, but I believe that he will move to United in January, and the Norwegian season has just finished. And he finished up the second top goal scorer in Norway, with 16 league goals behind Rada Preka. Does that name ring a bell? I think it was Sunderland.
Sunderland.
Yeah. So
Roy Keane signing, if I believe.
I think it was, yeah. And yeah, that just shows the sort of striker it takes, really, to score goals in Norway. So obviously the competition, with all due respect, is going to be nowhere near that of the Premier League. His last game for Molde was the Cup final, the NM Coupon, I think it's called. He scored two goals in that final, but unfortunately his side lost out on penalties. So Diouf, 16 league goals, joins us in January, and you never know, he might provide a bit of an attacking threat if he gets a chance in the first team. So look out for him when he does join. Second, we'll move on to Ben Amos, the young England goalkeeper, England under-21 now. I think he's part of the under-21 squad. He's on loan at Peterborough for a month. It was with Darren Ferguson, but he's now moved on by mutual consent, I'm led to believe. He joined them at the back end of October, that's Amos, but he's only played one game for them so far as well, of a month-long loan, and that was a 2-1 defeat to Barnsley. So he obviously didn't play too well in that, because he'd have been back in the side, and he wasn't. So unfortunately, not looking too good for Amos at Peterborough. Let's move on to look at Plymouth now. We've got David Gray, and we did have James Chester there as well, but unfortunately Chester had to be sent back to United. That was after he damaged cartilage following Plymouth's 2-1 win over Scunthorpe. That was the beginning of October. David Gray, since our last loan watch, he's made 9 starts for Plymouth in the Championship. So he's looking a sort of ever-present part of their team. And, well, I've said it in the past with Danny Simpson, who I'll go on to discuss in a moment. Someone like David Gray, if he does well on loan at a championship-level club, the likelihood is that he's probably going to stay there, to be honest. I'd like to move on to Rodrigo Possibon, but there's so much sort of controversy surrounding what's going on with Possibon, whether he's at Braga, whether he's been sent back to United, and there are still question marks that are yet to be answered with Possibon. I can confirm he's not played for the reserves or for Braga since we last touched on this subject. So again, there's been nothing in the news either. So nothing, unfortunately, to report on Rodrigo Possibon. Mentioned Danny Simpson. As we know, he's at Newcastle. He missed the end of October with an ankle injury for Newcastle, but he has been a mainstay in their team. And you may have seen it on the highlights on the television. He scored a curling cross shot in his most recent game for the Toon Army against Peterborough. So good to see him on the score sheet. That just leaves me to talk about the two lads that are at Watford, and arguably the most exciting of the lot of the players that are out on loan at the moment is Tom Cleverley. He's doing really superbly well at Watford. He scored in their 3-2 defeat to Coventry at the end of September. And then he grabbed the winner in a 1-0 win over Middlesbrough 2. He was heavily involved in Watford's 4-1 win over Sheffield Wednesday. I believe he was absolutely outstanding in that game as well, where he picked up 2 assists and was generally the standout player in that game. And his most recent game as well, he scored again. That was when Watford beat Preston 2-0. So out of 13 championship starts, Tom Cleverley scored 6 goals. So he really is doing well there. And hopefully he'll get a chance to prove himself in the first team when he does eventually return. Craig Cathcart is the other youngster at Watford at the moment. He started the last 5 games for the club, but he won't be pleased that he conceded 5. Well, the Watford back four conceded 5 against West Brom. That was at the end of last month. But both players, Cathcart and Cleverley, they've both been doing pretty well. They've both been called up to respective under-21 squads. So, it's fantastic to see that both of them doing well at club level and getting international recognition as well. Dov, you've got some information on Adam Lajic and a few of the other lads that are out on loan.
I have indeed. I've got to start with two. There's not really much to report on. Tom Heaton at QPR has played 2 Carling Cup games, which he reported on the last loan watch, and he's had no games since. So not really much action for him. He's basically been reserved to Czerny in the QPR goal. And Danny Drinkwater, we reported that he was having a good start to his Huddersfield career, regularly involved September, early October as well. And for the last 5 games, he's been dropped. So, and he's not gone as a sub or anything like that. So, it's not gone too well for Danny Drinkwater at Huddersfield. But I'm glad to report some positive news. We mentioned Fabian Brandy in the reserves review. He's recently went on loan to Gillingham and had his debut last weekend in the FA Cup and was fantastic. Basically, he was hauled down to win a penalty for Gillingham, and he set up Curtis Weston to open the scoring as well, and then he also scored himself. So it was heavily involved for them. It was a great performance on his first day. Well, his first and only game for him so far, so looks like that's going to be a successful loan spell for him. And finally, just a quick catch-up with Adam Lajic. We've not really spoken about him this season so far, but I mean, he's regular in the Partizan team. Started off the season really well. He scored like 2 or 3 goals in the first sort of like 4 or 5 games he played this season as well. He's played 10 games so far, got 3 goals in the Serbian League, played a game in the Serbian Cup, and he's also got some European experience as well. He's got 6 games in Europe so far this season and got 2 goals. So he's quite a key member of their side, and he's having a reasonably successful season so far. So it looks like he's going to be one to watch when he joins up with the United squad in January. So, I mean, too good, too bad. It's like watching Match of the Day.
Thanks for that, Dov. And we'll be sure to catch up again with Loan Watch in the next month or so.
You're listening to the redcafe.net podcast. You can email us at podcast@redcafe.net or alternatively, post your opinion on the redcafe.net forums.
Let's move on to Cabbage and Player of the Week now then. Dan, I'll start with you. You haven't spoken for a good 10 minutes or so, so give us your Player of the Week for this week.
Player of the Week, I think I'm going to give it Johnny Evans. I thought he was really, really good against Chelsea. I wasn't fazed by, you know, the threat of Drogba and Anelka. Yeah, and I think he put in a really good performance, and for the Kung Fu Kikon Drogba as well. So, yeah.
Dob?
I'm going to give player of the week to Anderson. I thought he played really well, and I quite liked his little face when things didn't go his way, his frustrated face, and he's sticking his bottom lip out. So I'm going to give him some joy and give him player of the week this week. What about you, Steve?
I was going to give it Anderson as well. Yeah, I think I am. I thought he played really well, like you say. Always interested, buzzing around. And I think the big thing was he stopped Michael Essien playing, which is a key role to play. And we know the talents that Essien has. So that just shows the sort of credentials that Anderson has and that he can compete with that top level sort of player. So really pleased for him. And let's do Cabbage now then. Dov, Cabbage for this week.
I'm really struggling for a cabbage this week. The only player I can think of is Fletcher, to be honest, just for giving away the free kick. But I mean, it wasn't even his fault.
That's
hard. I can't think of one. I don't know, Michael Owen or something. I'm really struggling. I thought it was a good team performance. I'll tell you what. I'll give it to Fletcher because he was moaning at the referee, and I don't like people moaning at the referee. So yeah, he can have it.
Dan.
Ryan Giggs. I don't know how you really missed that, Dov, but yeah.
Can I change that?
No, I can't change that. I think Giggs, he did all right. Some of his touches were pretty nice, but I think just his final ball on Sunday was a bit of a letdown. That's due to his own high standards, of course, but I think, you know, unfortunate. Yeah, but I think I'll give it to Giggs. Where are you, Steve?
Yeah, I'm with you, Dan, to be honest. I mentioned it earlier on in the show that I really didn't think Giggs was up to it in the Chelsea game. Unfortunately, because he's arguably been our best player so far this season, so it was a shame to see him not really competing in the Chelsea game. He was really struggling. So for me, it's Ryan Giggs. And guys, what about Wayne Rooney and the 12th man vibe that we saw him utter to the television cameras? I'm all for things like that. I know that could have got him into a bit of trouble, but fortunately it hasn't. But to be honest, I think that shows that players are human. They've got passion. They have the ideas of the fans. It's not just like, oh, they're robots and you play a game, there's no passion in it, you come off the pitch and you earn your money. But someone like Rooney wears his heart on his sleeve, and I think it was great to see.
Yeah, I thought it was quite funny. It was clear what he said as well. but... I mean, in a way, he's right. You know, I thought that the referee didn't have the best of games. But, I mean, it happens all the time. I'm sure at Old Trafford we get decisions that we shouldn't get. Fair play to Rooney. I mean, he could have got in a lot of trouble, but he's not done so. He's got away with it.
Right, well, before we finish up this week, Dob's going to bring us news of a Legends profile. We won't obviously be previewing anything because it is International Week next week. So, Dob, finish us off with a fantastic Legends profile.
Well, Steve, I shall bring some joy to this utterly depressing podcast. And my legend this week is a man by the name of John Frederick Rowley, or Jack Rowley, as he is more commonly known. I like how I do all these players, and I've always got loads of names. It's good. He was born in Wolverhampton on the 7th of October, 1920. And he started off his football career with his local club under the tutelage of Major Frank Buckley. And after he was playing there, signed up by Bournemouth, made his league debut for them. He didn't play too many games for them, only played 22 games, scored 12 goals, and then Manchester United came in. In 1937, signed for Manchester United by Walter Crickmer for a fee of £3,000, and he was only 17 when he joined as well, and made his debut for us just after his 18th birthday on the 23rd of October 1937 in a 1-0 victory over Sheffield Wednesday. And in only his second game for the club, he scored 4 goals against Swansea, and he basically played as a striker or like a winger. He started off as a winger, sort of moved in as a striker as well, and that season he scored 9 goals in 25 games. That was his debut, and then the war came along, as we all know, which has been sort of marked this week as well. He spent 6.5 years as an anti-tank gunner with the South Staffordshire Infantry, and he was given the very imaginative nickname of the Gunner. Exactly, Steve. This name was maybe to become a bit more apt in future, as it was quite the accurate shooter. Ding dong, have some of that. basically for 8 years, Rowley held the Manchester United scoring record each season, and in the 51-52 season he bagged 30 goals in 40 games, and that was a record until 1960 when Dennis Vialet sort of surpassed that. In 359 league games he scored 175 goals, and this was even like this was taken away the 6 years of World War II. So imagine how many goals he scored, or he would have scored if that never happened. Just one thing, like during the war, he did play for a few other clubs. Obviously, with football suspended, he played for Spurs, and basically he played one game for Spurs, scored 7 goals in that, and then the next week scored 8 goals when he played a game for Wolves. So he was quite the goal scorer. After the war. Played in the 1948 FA Cup final win against Blackburn, got a couple of goals in that. He broke the Manchester United goal scored season record by consecutive hat-tricks in the first 2 games of the season against West Brom and Middlesbrough, and helped the United topple Spurs to win the league by 4 points. And even though he was quite a prolific goal scorer, he only played a handful of games for England, 6 in total, but he managed 6 goals. And in the 6 games, he played in 4 different positions, so it's not too bad as well. After his career ended, he went on to play for Plymouth Argyle for a couple of years after that. Played 56 games for them, only got 14 goals, and then went on to become a player manager for them as well. Managed Oldham, and then had a successful spell as Ajax manager in 1963-64. So he was quite well received abroad as well. Then came back, managed Wrexham, and finished off his managerial career in Oldham. Sadly, he died on the 28th of June 1988, aged 77. But he is one of our highest scorers. Overall, he got 182 goals for the club, so he was quite the sharpshooter, as they say. I don't know how many more shooting puns I can get into that, but he was quite a player for us post-war period. So yeah, he is my legend this week.
You're listening to the RedCafe.net podcast. You can email us at podcast@redcafe.net, or alternatively, post your opinion on the RedCafe.net forums.
Well, that is just about the lot for this week's RedCafe.net podcast. As always, feedback, questions and comments, podcast@redcafe.net. Get yourself signed up to the Facebook group too. Excuse me to say thanks very much for listening, and we'll see you again next week. We'll be right back.